Hi, this is Gigi Edgley, and you're listening to the We Be Geeks podcast.
And welcome to another episode of We Be Geeks. It is episode 94, only six away from that magical number of 100.
I'm going to take off shoes to count that high. That's pretty high. Yeah. I got lots of fingers. In case you're figuring that out in your head. I'm a centipede.
It hurts my head.
So 100, that's, mostly numbering. 100, and we've got, you were talking about last week, we got some goodies for some listeners.
Yep. We have coming from Bruce Sick, the Zone Continuum. It's going to be given away.
Bruce's birthday, didn't we have a shout out for that?
We did do a shout out for his birthday a couple weeks ago. I'm both, actually.
All right.
Anything we say on Facebook also gets said on Twitter.
Oh, that's right.
Zenoscope sent us Oz hardcover and Alice in Wonderland hardcover. Well, we got this nice little package from Valiant Comics. In it, from Robert Myers, who's the operations coordinator, sent us this little note.
Oh, it says congrats on your 100th episode. So on official Valiant letterhead there too.
Yeah. So
mess around.
Written in hand too. Hey, that's actually written in hand too. That's time to do that. It's not like some form letter you had the secretary type out. That's cool.
Yeah.
Hey, talking about not messing around.
What is that?
How about
this note?
More than just a note. How about three hardcovers?
Whoa. What we get?
Harbinger Deluxe Edition number 1.
Nice. Still in the shrink wrap. Still shiny.
Yep.
Pointy corners and all. Harbinger Volume 1.
XO Manowar Deluxe Edition number 1.
Nice.
So nice. Love these prizes.
And the last one.
There's so many. We can't.
Archer and Armstrong.
Nice. Volume 1.
Deluxe Edition number 1.
Man. That's a good starter set for somebody that's looking to get in the Valiant right there.
Yeah.
Great starter set because they're all three hardcovers. And they're all three brand new. You can get them for free. So somebody's going to be jealous. I'm going to be jealous of. I was going to tell you, Mike, episode 99, I quit, and then I'm going to come back after like 101. So I can be eligible for the contest. What?
No. Nope.
What?
You have to be unemployed for at least 90 days, and the contest will be over by then.
It's been mouse rules. What about, are you still working on more prizes for this big 100 contest?
I am still working on more prizes. Right now, we're talking between the five books.
That's got to be at least $100 right there.
Try more than that.
The hardcovers are probably valued at about $30 each, right?
The two from Zenoscope are valued around $25 each, rounding up. These are valued at $40 each.
Wow.
So we're up to value-wise, what, $170 plus whatever we get from Bruce, which I'm sorry, if Zone Continuum from Bruce, the original copies, to me that's priceless.
Yeah.
Those are
hard to find.
Absolutely priceless. To me, it doesn't matter what the condition is. It's a great story. It's absolutely worth it. Now, I'm also doing a contest for Marvel, for the Mighty Marvel Geeks show, because we're getting ready to hit our 50th issue over there, and I have coming for that contest. Yes, because I'm running a contest for both shows at the same time. Go figure, right?
Just get that intern to do it that you talk about.
What
that
intern?
You didn't get that intern?
Uh-uh.
That homeless man that sits out on your street corner?
No.
You said you just give him an internship.
No.
Pay him in peanut butter sandwiches.
Hey, we're not running this 8 days a week. So, we're okay with interns. I think we can handle it within ourselves with no problem.
You haven't started putting your kid to work yet, have you? That's usually good. Easy, cheap slave labor as a kid.
So far, her...
That's what, too, right? You have two cheap laborers.
Right now, my kid's work on the show is...
And that's adorable and all, but you know, it's time she needs to really step up and do some more work. She's been slacking. I need to see some written articles on the website.
Yeah.
Great that time to go was.
Don't see that happening anytime soon.
It was good.
But, I love it. But no, Yeah, I've reached out to former partners and former guests to see what we could get. But man, I think Valiant's definitely thrown the gauntlet. And I know I've been slacking. It's been crazy around here, but I will get pictures of the books up for the site. But for the Marvel show, Marvel contest, I have 28 digital codes for Marvel books, Marvel comics. And I have yet to figure out if I'm going to do some giveaways leading up to it. And then one large bulk. So who knows how these 28 are going to get divided leading up to the 50th issue. But yeah, that's come from guest Ryan Penagos there at Marvel. Joe Caramagna is sending some stuff. Brian Crosby, who was on the show, who is one of the WDI or Walt Disney Imagineers, who's worked on Seekers of the Weird and Figment, is gotten a signed Secrets of the Weird poster signed by all the Imagineers involved on that project. Jim Zub's, I believe, sending something. It's not going to be Figment related, because can you believe it? Figment, every issue, minimum second printing. And I think some of the early stuff has already hit third printing.
I think it's getting close to trade paperback time even for it, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm sure that's one I'm going to want trade paperback. Or I think it's coming out hardcover first.
Probably.
But with this, I want first printing.
Yeah.
I will pay for first printing. I've got first printings on everything else, and I'm not going to let it go. I even have one of the variant covers from issue one. So, I mean, this book has, you know, who knew it was going to take off the way it did?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a couple of the stuff's third print. You tell me that Figment should not be up for an Eisner Award next year at Comic-Con. I fully expect to see this on the list. And then I guess it was announced at New York City Comic-Con that Jim Zub will be one of the writers on Marvel Universe Ultimate Spider-Man.
Ooh.
Which is the cartoon to comic adaptation, where they take the comic or take the cartoon episode and narrow it down to 22 pages.
Right.
So
that's nice. I seriously love everything that I've read that Jim Zub has done. Like, he's amazing. And anytime I hear he's coming out with something, yes, I have
Skull Kickers.
They're back.
Great. Wayward. Wayward is an amazing book.
Yeah, I
actually
haven't
got it.
Yeah.
I need it.
Yeah, that one just came out, I think, didn't it?
August was issue one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll get him on the show either before the 100 or after the 100. Who knows?
Jay-Z, I like to call him. That's how tight we are. Jay-Z. So,
I love Samurai Jack. I'll be like chatting that up. I love the new Samurai Jack. They're good.
Well, he's also working on Dungeons and Dragons as well.
Like,
that's
doing everything.
Like the animated adaptation, or is it just from actual?
I think it's a new title.
Okay. I think Dynamite, I think, has the rights to the actual, like, based off the role playing game.
Well, he's also working with Gail Simone on Conan Red Sonja tie-in. So,
right.
So yeah, I mean, he's become an up and comer, and I think Figment really took him over the top with it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Skull Kickers was already out, but I mean, Figment has turned into a launching stone. I think that's really got his name out.
He did Sex Criminal too, right?
I'm not sure.
I get him confused.
No, that's Matt Fraction did the Sex Criminal.
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking he was tied in with there too. But.
So yeah, I'm working on the giveaway page on Facebook. So you're going to have to like us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. So get ready for y'all's Twitter followers to increase. And it's just going to be a randomized thing. So, I think that's going to be one of the easiest ways, to do it. You know, maybe there might be some trivia questions as well to help get extra entries. Like, what episode did Marty join us on? If Marty even remembers.
Am I supposed to know that answer? Oh, crap. Give me a second. Let me Google it. Don't fail me now.
Let's see. Marty, I remember this one, obviously. I will tell you, it's somewhere between episode 49 and episode 51.
What episode did Marty quit so you can get in on the prize contest?
Yeah, right? I think we should be able to win the contest, too, because it's like the best now.
Yeah, I got to quit right now.
Well, you tell me, what other podcasts have you known out there who has brought you this type of thing for support a 100th anniversary celebration. And usually it's like, oh, we're going to do a live show. Oh, no, we're pre-recorded, so we apologize for that. If I could figure it out, we might do sort of like WW After Dark, where people can join in and watch us record. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but maybe do that every now and then.
Would I have to wear my sexy nurse costume?
I was thinking something else.
Like sexy librarian? It is Halloween, so I can get all these costumes.
I was thinking more like sexy Batgirl.
Mm.
Or Spider-Woman.
Let's just call it Batgirl. There's no sexy Batgirl. It's just Batgirl. Already is sexy, right?
Depends on which Batgirl you're talking about.
I think they all have their merit. Yeah. Although I haven't seen, like, I guess the new one. They just did a redo.
I love the new costume, but man, I've been hearing a lot of panning about it.
The confusing thing for me as a reader is like, does that mean you just de-aged Barbara Gordon after you relaunched her just a couple years ago? So I don't know the full story. I haven't read the book since maybe issue 12, so I can't really have a formed opinion, but that's just my first thought when I saw it. Did they just revamp Barbara Gordon after she was revamped 2 years ago?
Yeah, it's almost like it was a reboot.
It felt like a Marvel relaunch, because that's what they'll do. Like, new number one, although this wasn't a new number one, but a new number one with a new image and a new design and all that good stuff.
Well, I'll tell you, what was the other good one that came out today? DC is finally trying to step up the game. Did y'all see this?
What about?
Well, they have announced their lineup at their shareholder meeting today, well, on Wednesday the 15th, on what's coming out from now, or from 2016 through 2020.
Yes.
You got Batman versus Superman.
Of course.
Suicide Squad.
The surprise of it all. Is it not? Next stinking year, right?
2016.
So 2 years from now, in a movie that we didn't even know they were casting for, obviously is getting cast for it. Because they got to be working on it now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And there was talk of doing a Suicide Squad TV series.
Right. Apparently, we got hoodwinked there. Apparently, it's not TV. It's a movie.
And
the only one that's not associated with Justice League, really.
Yeah. And then the Lego Ninjago movie to the big screen.
I'm excited. I love Lego Ninjago.
2017 will be Wonder Woman, Justice League, and the Lego Batman movie.
Way too far away. I can't deal with that.
2018, The Flash, Aquaman, and the Lego Movie 2.
Yeah.
Oh.
2019.
Wow.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson as Black Adam in Shazam. So cast now for 2019. Five years away.
Doesn't mean he's only going to be in the Shazam movie.
This is true. 2019 will also have Justice League 2. 2020, Cyborg and Green Lantern.
Oh, I'm so excited for Cyborg.
Never thought I'd see that one.
Yeah, right? And Green Lantern?
And Green Lantern. That's all that in 2020.
Now it'll be the question of, I'm sure that they will jettison the previous Green Lantern movie because that's what should happen to that movie. And, I'm sure they would recast that, 6 years in the future. So Ryan Reynolds, unless they're going with old age, maybe they can put the gray streaks.
Oh, Justice Society look?
Right.
Well, now that would be the time to do either Jon Stewart or Kyle Reidner.
Yeah, good. That's what I was going to say. Who would they do?
Or Guy Gardner.
Yeah, or you surprise them all and go Green Lantern Core and have them all in there and a new franchise to go off of.
That's an idea as well.
Yeah, they got plenty of time to think on that one, though.
But who knows? By that time, they could have the TV series, too.
Yeah, and by that time, the comic boom will have busted and all these movies will go to the wayside.
Well, then I'm hearing there's a Teen Titans TV show that's coming to TBS or TNT.
TNT, I did see that. That one caught my eye, and it was like a little blip of a sentence in the press release. So apparently it's not well thought out, but there was, I think, producer at least attached to it. So a Titans TV show, it sounds like it would be live action, and it sounds like it would be on TNT. So that was really big news. I was really shocked by that one.
Supergirl is going to CBS. Cinematically, I don't know if it's too little too late for Marvel or for DC. Because now everyone, I'm not going to call this news. I'm going to call it speculation because everyone jumped all over it and calling it fact when nothing was confirmed. Read the article. novels, folks. All it says is Robert Downey Jr. is in talks for to be in Captain America 3. It's not, does not mean he's in it.
Yeah, he's, I mean, they're basically signing papers. It's not, nothing's done until he signs the papers, but
nothing's done until Marvel releases it.
Yeah, he's practically in. Did you see the paycheck he will get for just making a cameo? It's rumored he's going to get like $40 million plus some back end just for making a cameo in Cap 3.
Actually, it's supposed to be more than just a cameo. It's supposed to be more of a,
like, well, for not being the main guy, paying someone $40 million is a pretty good change.
And of course, everyone's speculating still it's going to be Civil War.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, come on now. We still got to get to, if it is Civil War, it's going to upset me that they're going to go more Civil War and not have Spider-Man, not have X-Men, not have Fantastic Four before get to Infinity Gauntlet.
But wait, the other rumors this week, it's seeming from more and more sources, they're thinking that it looks like Marvel and Sony are talking about a little partnership to possibly loan Spider-Man into some Marvel content and vice versa. Probably more so Spider-Man in Marvel stuff. But,
yeah, but how many...
if that is true, then that would be easy to get Spider-Man into the war storyline if that is what they're working towards.
But haven't we already mentioned a while back, a few months ago, that, Sony's hurting, especially because of this push for 4K TV. I think we talked about it during the E3 show.
Mm-hmm.
Sony has been trying to sell off the movie franchise, their movie studios.
But they're not going to sell off the one property that is guaranteed to make the money. Been making the money to more Spider-Man movies in the last recent years. So I don't think they're going to give up the right, but they may work out a partnership where they get a piece of, everyone.
Hey, at least they're not Fox, which is going to be having movie properties with no comics to essentially back it up.
Well, I've already had my tantrum on that one where they're not going to cancel the X-Men. They're not. X-Men, it's either X-Men or Avengers in all the Marvel comics out there. And so to say that they're going to cancel X-Men because Fox owns the X-Men rights, that's asinine. Fantastic Four, that's a different story.
They already took...
really picked up Fantastic Four book, honestly. Tell me this. That's the reason, that's one of the reasons it's getting canceled or not being done anything with, is because it's a franchise that not that many people really care about, just to be honest with you.
I mean, think about it this way. They've already moved Sue into S.H.I.E.L.D. and incorporating her into the newer Avengers group. I mean, Reed's technically been part of the Avengers with the new Avengers because of the more Illuminati-esque feel with it.
And I think one crazy train's kind of riding with the other one, where it's just maybe it's a coincidence thing, and maybe there is a little bit of truth to it. We really don't want this Fantastic Four to be associated with our Fantastic Four. But, honestly, I can't remember the last time I picked up a Fantastic Four book. Maybe when Hickman started his run on Fantastic Four, I gave it a couple of issue read, and that's the last time. And before that, I can't even tell you the last time I read a Fantastic Four book. So it's just the interest level in that title not high.
The last time I picked up a Fantastic Four book is when I moved it out of the way because someone put it on top of the Avengers book on the shelf.
Exactly.
So, but I got a special treat for everyone tonight. I have a guest on the show, coming on the show.
Cool.
So let's try and get her on, and we'll be right back with Ellen Dubin. So we have joining us direct from the Great Toronto Area, or the GTO, as most people refer to it. You might know her from from Lex as Jigarita, Napoleon Dynamite as the Rubbermaid Mom.
Tupperware Mom.
of course, you might recognize the voice from Skyrim.
Yes.
It is the great Ellen Dubin. How are you doing tonight, Ellen?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. Everybody okay?
Everyone, yeah. I'm doing fine.
Now that you're here, we've got a show, so
yay.
That's
the show, as they say. The show must...
So Ellen and I have known each other since MegaCon 2013, where we first met, and I totally blew the introduction of the first interview. Thankfully for digital, we were able to do a second take. But I've seen recently you are involved with a show called Nobility.
Yeah. Nobility is a sci-fi pilot I just shot with an incredible cast.
Yeah.
Like the famous, I mean, when I heard Walter Koenig signed on to do this, I went, are you kidding? I don't even need to read a script. I, you know, I'm in. And then when I heard Doug Jones was involved, who I'm a huge fan of, and he's even taller than me, I went, I got to, you know, join this cast. And Christopher Judge from Stargate and Tori Higginson from Stargate and Cass Anwar from Assassin's Creed and Miracle Laurie from Welcome to the Dollhouse. And I'm going to give all my cast kudos. James Kyson from Heroes. Who did I miss? Let me think. And E.J. De La Pena was the creator, and he wrote this wonderful kind of anti-heroes on a spaceship. Oh, and Adrian Wilkinson. How could I forget my beautiful Adrian Wilkinson from Xena Warrior Princess? And a new wonderful actor named Darren Jacobs, who is a fabulous British actor who also was a nobility. There's three of us who are a member of a certain tribe called the Eugens, and I'm not going to tell you too much about us, except we're very white. We're very, not white race-wise, but we have pale sort of powdered skin, and we're very intellectual, and we don't think too much of humans. That's all I can really say. And there's a lot of conflict on the ship, and there's a lot of anti-heroes, and sort of, it's sort of, they call it Firefly meets The Office. So it's, yeah, there's a few sci-fi comedy shows, but I love the combination, and that's what attracted me to the script, to be this interesting colonel. I'm a military woman, and very different than Jigarada the Wicked. I don't eat people, but I eat them in a different way. I can intimidate. You know, there's many ways to, you know, it's a different way of looking at it, but in a much more subtle character. But we're hoping it sells. It's being edited right now as I'm speaking to you. There's going to be some great special effects and music, and Neil Johnson from England directed it, and it's just an incredible cast and crew. And I love these indie kind of projects that some, you know, this E.J. De La Pena was so excited to get this cast together, and he approached most of us on Facebook and got us that way, because he was fans of all of ours. I mean, he has, his ringtone had the Lex theme song. it was kind of cool that he had that. And, you know, I'm very, very excited about this show. And we went to San Diego Comic-Con and did panel there. And it was very successful that, you know, people who missed it wanted us to do another one. And we also had a booth there. So I think that's pretty amazing for a project that's not quite done yet to have that kind of following already. And we've already got these sort of little fan clubs for the show. And I'm really excited about it. So as soon as I know when it's on, I'll let you know.
Excellent.
Is it going to be, is it more of a comedy with sci-fi elements, or is it more of a sci-fi with some comedy elements? Which way?
Yes. Yes.
Yes and yes.
You know, it depends on which scene and what you're looking at. I mean, there's some very straightforward dramatic scenes, but there's a lot of comedy, especially with Doug Jones's character, and he's not prosthetics at all. You're going to actually see his beautiful face.
And they let him talk? They actually let him use his own voice?
He is an amazing actor. He plays the ship's wacky psychiatrist. And I'm telling you, it is, you can go online, there's on the nobilitytheseries.com, and you will see some of the new trailers, one that premiered at San Diego Comic-Con and one that just, I think, finished a couple of days ago, and they keep adding new elements to it. So,
I've seen
I think you're going to really like it. I'm really pleased with it.
Yeah, I've seen the Comic-Con one and loved it. And
isn't it great?
I'm just excited for the show itself, just all together. Now, you're also working on another show that's kind of more of a web series?
Yeah, I start shooting a new show called Starfall. And it's by a man named John Ellis, who wrote it. And the concept, again, is in a ship. A lot of them take place in ships. But this one is really, really different in that, for example, we're all members of a different race. And my race is called the Selsky, S-E-L-S-K-Y race. I can't tell you too much about it because I'm sworn to secrecy. But what I can tell you is that I'm not a straightforward, I thought, oh no, I'm going to play another military person. But this is a different military person than nobility. I'm a lieutenant, but I have a shape-shifting issue.
Issue?
Well, I have some kind of blood of some animal in me that now and then comes out.
Hmm. Ah. Is it an Earthborn animal, or is it off-planet?
Yes, this is a very well-known domestic animal, but I don't know how domesticated this animal is. You know, it's one of the top three animals that probably people have at home, but... you know, the felinish aspects can be misinterpreted, I think, probably. So we are going to start shooting that in at the beginning of November in Reno, Nevada. And I'm going to tell you who's in this cast. This wonderful actor named Bill Oberst Jr. from Abraham Lincoln versus the Zombies and Criminal Minds. He's a big, you'd know him if you saw him, a big horror. He's done a lot of horror movies. And we've got a guy from Grimm named Damian Puckler, who's in the show Grimm. And we have my friend Andrew Jackson, who I did The Collector with and another series. And he's like a major, he was on Stargate SG-1 and Earth Final Conflict as well. And an actor named Richard Leacock, who was in a show called Lake Placid. I don't know if you remember that show. No. But anyway, it's a great ensemble cast, and I'm looking forward to shooting it, that. And he's trying to sell it to, you know, there's so much available now to new filmmakers and new television makers or producers. Between Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, and so they're all trying to sell things, and people are doing it without studios now, which is so great for. And I'm really enthusiastic about this new wave of filmmakers and TV producers, because they're getting things done, and it's actually kind of cool that we have the internet or these other alternatives that are not big networks, because it's really hard for new people or even people that are established to get into that race. So I'm really looking forward to shooting this one as well. It's kind of the year of new people for me who are fans and been promising me that one day when they do something, see, you never know. True? You never know what people are going to do. And when they, this is why I get upset with actors when somebody said, you know, 8 years ago, this guy approached me. 8 years ago. And I thought to myself, he said, I have nothing yet. I don't have too much on paper. I don't have a lot of money, but if this goes, I'm going to use you. And this man kept his promise, which is so rare to find loyalty in our crazy show business world that, you know, I brought on a couple of other actors, and someone had brought on me originally. So it's kind of like, I love this team kind of spirit with this type of genre too. I think it's one of the most, I mean, fan-friendly genres, sci-fi, but it's also the most actor-friendly in terms of helping each other, I find. I mean, I do a lot of other types of genres, but I'm finding this one the most loyal and the most supportive.
Yeah, because it seemed like you're listing off some of your other castmates on your shows, and it's all like some other genre shows that, you know, from this guy, and it's almost like a connected dot of how you guys know each other, like this little almost club. Does it feel kind of like a club?
Yeah, but, yeah. It does, but not an exclusive one in that they're, you know, the golf club, you only have to wear polo pants.
You know, got the Letterman jacket going.
Yeah. No, we don't have jackets. It's just that it's, I think it's just, if you know somebody, like in Starfall, I knew an actor that fit the bill and I suggested him and he phoned him up and they got along very well. There's been, you know, this is wonderful. There's no auditions. It's just respect for the work and people getting along and, you know, the filmmaker just wanted to make sure that this man was on the same page and hired him. So, and when Nobility came about, I have to credit my friend Kaz Anwar, who brought me into the table read, because they were missing some actresses at the time. So a lot of actors would not go because it doesn't mean you're going to get the part. And I knew that EJ was a fan of Lex and a huge fan of Skyrim, but it didn't mean that he was going to hire me. And then in the reading, they really liked what I did and they had me in mind for a smaller part, and they gave me one of the leads because they liked what I did. And so that was because of a friend brought me to a reading, and I was willing to go there, 45-minute drive outside of LA, and read for free. But you know what? You do that for your friends, and you do that for new people, because you never know. You never know where things end up, and you've got to kind of be part of a team, even if you're not as yet. That's my philosophy.
That's so nice. I wish I had friends like that. Like, come here and read this, yeah, and then...
You will. You know what? You start to know, you know this in business, and you know this in life, and kind of the two are definitely intertwined for me because I am an actor, but I consider myself a human being first. You'd be surprised what other actors say about themselves, but it's you kind of learn, and sometimes the hard way, you sort of learn to separate what's real and what's not real and what's BS and, you know, who's really out because they're really interested in you and your well-being and who really just are interested in you and getting you just to use you or your contacts. It's a very fine line. And sometimes you just get screwed. Sometimes you do, but other times you don't. So that's the parts I try and dwell on, the good part.
Yeah. Do you stay, like, typically in the L.A. area when you're not working? Is that home or is that you just kind of stay away from that?
I consider my home a suitcase right now. you know, it's have pillow, will travel. I always make sure I take my pillowcase because it's something at least I know of mine. You know, we all have our own scents and S-E-N-T, not C-E-N-T-S. My family, I mean, I'm from Toronto originally, so my parents are here in Toronto, so I still consider that my home. But, you know, the song, wherever I lay my hat is my home, wherever she lays her hat is her home. I don't have a lot of hats, but I consider that the way, you know, where I'm working. And, you know, we all have bases, I would say, in our lives. You know, we come home, we go away. I mean, there's still no place like home. Thank you, Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. Your original home is usually your home, I think, for most people.
I don't know if, like, if you're in the LA area and that hustle and bustle of, you know, it's probably maybe harder to want to do favors because everybody seems like they're looking for the next handout or looking to use you. And if maybe, like, being outside of that LA area, if it's maybe it's easier to trust people or maybe go along with some ideas like a web series or something that hasn't been picked up just yet.
You know, I just like working. I just really believe in, I've always kind of been an underdog in my career. It's taking me a little longer, you know, than most of my friends. When I was in my 20s, you know, now I'm 29, I worked, but I find that I'm getting better parts as I get older. Maybe it's the height, maybe it's my voice, maybe it's the powerful ladies, you know, the commander ladies, the ballsy ladies, the more aggressive ladies. But what was the question? So about LA, you know, there's good and bad people everywhere. There is good and bad everywhere. And you know what? I have met some great people in LA, and they, you know, the cliche that LA is all filled with phony people is not always true because EJ, this Nobility Project, and all the actors, you know, some were from LA. They're the nicest bunch of people, and the cast and the crew are so down to earth. You don't even think about where they're from. And you know, there's good and bad everywhere. So I just go with my gut. If I like somebody, you know, look at Napoleon Dynamite. I got the script. I went, what the heck is this? And, you know, didn't have a lot of money, but I thought, somebody's approaching me. It's kind of a quirky comedy. I hadn't done a comedy in a while. I'd been doing a lot of drama. I went, I've never been to Salt Lake City, Utah, or just outside. And where was that filmed? Wherever it was filmed in, I just had a blank. I'll remember in a minute.
It was like Idaho, isn't it?
Preston, Idaho.
Yeah.
Preston, Idaho. Thank you. And, you know, I just like meeting people and traveling the world and seeing different things. And, that was giving a chance to a new filmmaker, and that one was, the rest is history with that. I mean, you would never think that something could become the iconic comedy of a generation and become one of the top comedies of all time. So that was a small script with no huge A-plus movie stars. It created stars. It created working actors. So, I mean, that's what it's all about for me, really.
Talk about Napoleon a little bit, because we mentioned not too long ago where I guess they just put up like a statue of Dancing Napoleon on the film lot. I think it was 20th Century.
26 bucks,
yeah. Is it hard to believe that it's been like 10 years that movie came out and like it's had such an impact on really kind of culture? You know, it's one, because there have been very few movies that really have that, you know, you can think of having that defining moment. You remember when it came out, you remember really enjoying it. And that's one of those movies that, you know, kind of like the feather in a cap. Like, oh yeah, don't forget about Napoleon. In answer to your question,
yeah, it is absolutely astounding to me that it's hard to believe that it has been 10 years. And the only reason I knew it was 10 years was because of that statue. And then there was a 10-year reunion screening, which I was out of town for, or I would have gone. I'm sorry. And that's how I knew about it. And I went, no, this was just 3 years ago. This was just 4 years ago. And it's interesting because now you're starting to see John Heder and Ephraim Ramirez at conventions, at sci-fi conventions. So in the great thing about sci-fi conventions, people don't realize is, yes, it's great what you're doing currently or what you've got tomorrow, but actually the fans are there, a lot of them, for what was in the past. And it's one of the few things in the industry where the past is important. A lot of times, you know, when casting and producers, we want to know what you're doing tomorrow, what's coming up 5 years from now. The past doesn't interest them as much unless it made a lot of money and you've got a good IMDb number. So that's the great thing about Napoleon Dynamite. They're now starting to do conventions, and I was really hoping that the animation series would have taken off more because, John Peters got a new animated series. I think it's called Pickle and Peanut or something. It's for Disney. Yeah, Disney Junior, and it's a really interesting, quirky script, and he's going to be amazing in it. But yeah, I was really hoping that that would have taken off so I could have been a part of that later on in some episodes, but it didn't. But I am so thrilled to be a part of a film that didn't have to rely on anything but a quirky script, interesting characters, and interesting relationships. And again, no budget and no A-movie stars. It shows that the public really still wants good, interesting scripts with interesting people. And I'm just very proud to be part of this iconic film. I really am. You know, I'm just, it floors me every time I get a fan. And I get probably fan mail probably every week about that film.
Wow.
Still.
Wow.
Awesome.
Which is cool.
Yeah, I was really disappointed that the... I was really disappointed the cartoon didn't last. I enjoyed the 6 episodes that did come out. It was really funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I was sorry it didn't go too, because I thought it was very good, but I don't know. You never know.
Exactly. Jules has got a question.
You have a question?
No, I was just, I never even heard of the Napoleon Dynamite cartoon, so I must just be like living in a cave over here. But yeah, I didn't know that was a thing.
It didn't last very long, but the premise and the promise was, I thought it would go for a couple of years at least. So, and there was so much talk also of doing a sequel, but I think Jared Hess, who wrote the script, and Jerusha, his wife, I think they realized, leave well enough alone, because how can you top that? You can't.
Yeah.
You have to leave, some things you got to leave alone.
Because even the animated series kind of felt like they were having to pull from the movie, like little parts of the movie, just to kind of, I guess, bring the audience along with them. Like, oh, you remember when this happened in the movie? We're going to expound on that.
Yeah. And I think that was the problem.
Yeah, I don't know if that helped them or hurt them in the long run. And I don't. Fox put it out, I think, in the summertime, so that's why nobody really saw it or heard about it, and they just kind of burned them out real quick. And then,
don't feel badly, Jewel.
Yeah.
So, a lot of people know you for your screen work, be it big screen or small screen. Not a lot of people realize you do a lot of voice talent on video games. How did that come about?
Well, one day I was in an office visiting my commercial agent in Los Angeles, and I said to her, she said, God, you've got a good voice. I said, thank you. She says, I want to walk your stuff over to the other side of the room here where there's a big voice department. I said, sure. We set up a meeting, we hit it off, and I ended up signing with an incredible voice agent in Los Angeles called Vox, V-O-X, Inc., I-N-C, period, and I have to give them a lot of credit because they stuck by me at the beginning, because you don't usually book voice auditions in the beginning, no matter how brilliant you are. And things are slowly, 6 years later, been with them. Long story short, I don't know where we left off, but for those of you who missed it, recap, been with a wonderful agent, Vox, Inc., in Los Angeles. They send me on auditions. I tape them in a little studio like this, and you send them off. And the first audition I booked was for video games was Skyrim. Wow. So we started at the top.
So it's only downhill from here.
Yeah. And also, I did also Guild Wars 2. And I remember I didn't have proper equipment, and I was away in a hotel room, and I literally got on the floor. I wish I could show these people this. And I had a towel and a blanket over my head, and I was on my belly recording 13. You see, the more characters you record, the more you have a chance. So sometimes they'll give you like 19 or 20 characters to record. And I never understand actors who only record 2. You got a better chance if you record 20. Even if you don't, not 100%. Right, you know, you just find something and figure it out. So Guild Wars 2, I recorded, I think, about I think it was 12, 13, and Skyrim, a lot of characters as well. And then sometimes you wait months till you hear anything. And Skyrim was kind of done in an 8-month period, and Guild Wars 2 was done in a couple of years period, three or 4 years. So those were the first two I booked, and just, I love video games. I've got to tell you, I you're going to laugh. I've never played one. But as an actor, to me, they are the most sophisticated. It is like getting a film script with the most incredible emotional arc of a character. Even if you're playing some monster or some, you know, I played somebody in Guild Wars called Tyranna Taskjaw. There's amazing storylines that are really complex, especially Skyrim, where you are acting, you know, one minute you're crying over the execution of your brother, and the next minute you're a wench, serving beers in a bar. And you literally have to go from one line to the next, because you don't have a script, because they're very private about, you know, you sign non-disclosures about them. You're not allowed to tell anybody about the plot. Mind you, I never knew what was going on anyway half the time. And for Skyrim, it was sort of like a teleprompter going down, and you would literally read line by line by line by line, and the director in the booth would sometimes say, oh, in this scene, you're getting married and you don't like your husband. And I kept naming different names. I said, who's this guy? This is your husband. I said, well, I just had a husband. No, you have 10 or 12 husbands, because the player can choose which path you're going to pick, mm-hmm. and you're going to do different versions with different husbands, or you're going to have an aunt and an uncle, to my uncle, to my aunt, to my brother, to my sister, to my wife, to my kid, to my dog, to my cat. Same thing over and over again. And I didn't quite understand that until I realized, well, the game, the player chooses which way they're going to go. So hello, girl. But it's a fascinating genre. I can be 13, I can be 90, I can be, you know, I'm a 5'10½ girl, and I can play somebody, I played somebody who's height challenged, you know, in a Lord of the Rings kind of type of game, where you're playing somebody very tiny. It's just, you're not judged on how much you weigh, you know. In my film and television career, you are judged a lot, especially if you're a woman, on how you look and, you know, what your body looks like. So I feel really free doing voiceover work. I'm trying to corner the market now, because so many girls in LA
kind of talk kind of high and a little bit more like this.
So the fact that I can be military, and I'm hoping there'll be more military games, you know, like Call of Duty. I think maybe there's one woman the whole time. So I'm hoping we'll start, and I just did Defense Grid 2, which is a military commander, and so it was kind of nice to be barking and shouting orders at people. I mean, she has a little issue. I think she gets lobotomized or something. I'm not quite sure what happened there. And she becomes sort of, what happens, not a zombie, but a little bit of an androidish kind of character. So I had that duality, but I really like that women are being more featured in video games now than ever before. It's been heavily a male genre, as you guys know, that when you played, especially the military games, but I'm really kind of inching towards doing some of these, like I said, the military genre stuff. It's very good for my voice. And I love the fantasy stuff. You know, I love doing They Walk Through the Forest, and you're the Kate Blanchett kind of reads, as they call them, where they're more ethereal and lyrical, and, you know, can put you guys sort of in a nice mellow state. And, you know, there's a lot of, the Galadriel, is that how you say her name? From Lord of the Rings, G-A-L-D-R-I-E-L, Galadriel from Lord of the Rings. You know, there's all these prototypes that are in video games too, but they're very, my film and television and my theater background is very helpful for video games. If you notice, most video game actors have come from the theater, because especially their voices are very well trained. If you have the theater and you're able to also pronounce words that you literally get on the spot. So I have friends who could not do video games. They're great voiceover actors, but how do you pronounce, you know, oh, Lord of Theseus of Plebes and the Tyrrhenian powers of the Tyrolean Empire? You know, you have to be able to spout this kind of dialogue fast, furious, and you can't, you know, they don't have time. You have generally a 4-hour call to get in a lot of lines, a lot of dialogue, and having a theater background not only only gives you the language skills, the reading skills, but the emotional capacity and the emotional weight to literally change on a dime and go from deep sorrow to deep comedy to subtle. And then the film and television gives you the background to be able to talk to somebody like they're talking now and just be very realistic, like I'm talking to you. The audience is very sophisticated now. They don't really want video games where you're going, hello there, how are you? It's not. If you look at old video games and you look at new video games, the newer video games you could actually put up in a movie theater. Some of them are better than movies.
Yeah.
They look amazing. The actors are first rate. And that's why nowadays a lot of voiceover agencies are hiring actors. Not just about, as I keep telling people who wanted to get into the voiceover world, it is not about the sound of your voice. Yes, it's great if you have a strong voice or you have some, you know, you're a deep male and you have a great deep voice. But if you can act, even in a commercial nowadays, because everything is more realistic, you know, don't buy that soup. It's, you know, it's more by the soup. It's conversational. It's a different world now. And actors can do very well if you can break in, because it's very competitive in this world. That's why, but I love video games because every part of me is being used now, I feel. It's amazing.
Was it overwhelming when you got like, you know, you got like the few lines you had and you realized that this line of dialogue kind of rabbit hole this way and then this one goes, and you're essentially doing work that may never be heard by someone because they may never take that rabbit hole to that. Does that ever surprise you at all?
Do you mean
like how much work?
Do you mean they'll never use that take or?
No, like the player may never actually do what it needs to activate that.
You know what? I find from fans and from talking to fans of other voiceover actor friends of mine or sci-fi actors that an avid fan will sit and make sure that they have played every aspect of the game. It could take them a year or two. Like Skyrim, I have friends who are still playing and they've been playing it since it came out a couple years ago. And that's the beauty of this stuff. I mean, they can just sit there at night between 12 and 4 a.m. and play this world or that world. So, you know what? I don't worry about that. But that's a very good question. And I'm sure there are some characters that are chosen more than others. But I really do believe that if someone is a great fan of the genre, they're going to get to every nook and cranny of the game.
Right. And of course, Skyrim is one of those games that I'm almost scared to play because I know exactly how much time I will dedicate to it.
You're never going to get out of your house. You're going to be ordering a lot of takeout.
Exactly. I will become 900 pounds and I will only be communicating to the outside world through this podcast. So that's it.
I love Skyrim. Skyrim is fun. It's funny because when you're playing it, it'll just be like, oh, you can pick up anything, like broom. And I'm like, why would I need a broom? Like pot, do you want this base? Yes or no? Like,
yeah.
So there's just like some funny aspects to it. But yeah,
there's
and I
world
I got
in there, right?
Yeah. I got stuck a few times and I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Like I'm running around and like fighting and stuff. And I don't know what my next like mission is. So I guess it's just a lot of kind of trying to figure out what you're supposed to do next. But I didn't make it too far. I still have a long way to go. I still love it though.
We'll have more to talk about that.
I think I saw on like Kotaku somebody had posted that one gamer had gone in and stealthily stolen like everything out of this small town and then like compiled it on this hilltop or valley or something like that and then took like a screen cap of it. So
really?
Like he basically that's all he did for like hours upon hours is just stole items out of this town until nothing was left. And that's what, you know.
Wonder what that guy does for a living.
Exactly.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. Who knows what people do with these games, but it's fascinating to know that how popular they really are. I mean, this is just an industry that floors me. You know, you talk about the disbelief of Napoleon Dynamite. In a way, this is even more, I mean, the money involved, and not for us so much, but for the producers, it's just through the sky. And the popularity of fans love this. And it's nice kind of that actually that video game actors and creators are being more recognized at conventions now. First, they never brought voiceover people to these conventions that much, maybe more in the anime world. But now, this is I think this is great that we're being more recognized for our work in them, and as well as the creators. And when you think about it, it was so neat to be on the phone with people from Bethesda or ArenaNet, and they're telling you, depending on the game, like Bethesda would say, you know, this guy, he would give you the background of your character, and you realize that they have, it's like they have birthed these babies. They have created, you know, what world, what they lived like, who were their ancestors. I mean, 10 years in the making, 8 years in the making, the drawings, the artwork. I mean, I give credit. I mean, I give credit to the writers, but if you look at the visuals, I mean, I can draw a stick figure. I mean, that's it. I mean, this, to me, I mean, I really admire it. And as I said before, some of them are so, the scope, the cinematic scope of some of them are so incredibly breathtaking to look at them. The mountains, the countryside, the inns, the animals. I mean, incredible visuals. You really have to admire the amount of work that goes into video games. It's quite an undertaking, and I really, really appreciate all the team. There's a team that has to put together.
Yeah. It's interesting because I'm wondering why there hasn't been a Skyrim movie or the makings of a Skyrim movie, because I think it would look very nice if they made it.
Never know.
And then you could be in the Skyrim movie.
You never know. I love
the only problem with that is you almost, like, because there's so many hours of gameplay in that, there's no way you could condense that to an hour and a half, 2 hour movie and appease everyone, because they've got 50, 60 hours of gameplay in it.
Complain about Scorsese movies being too long, and that, what are those, 3 hours, 3.5 hours? You can imagine. They would have to do, they could do like, and I don't know if it would work, but I love the idea anyway. It would be, come to the cinema every night.
Yeah.
For a year.
Bring back the dailies or the weeklies or whatever.
Yeah.
Like 1940s. Do you think there's still like any kind of, among acting actors, like a stigma about doing video games, or do you see that kind of falling away a lot more and more?
No, not anymore, because now A-list movie stars are getting, and they still are. I mean, Skyrim has some, I think it was Kate Beckinsale's in Skyrim, and I think Christopher Lee's in Skyrim. There's some big names in that too. If I go back to, I have to check my IMDb, but I don't think there is any stigma. Everybody wants to do it, like everybody wants to do animation films. I mean, if you look at animation films now, the working animation actor cannot get in, or they're getting the smallest parts. I mean, people were the biggest animation actors in California or in New York or in the world right now are sort of taking a back seat. You know, when Steve Carell or Julia Roberts or Jack Black, no offense, they're all fabulous, want to do that, you know, then the hierarchy changes. So there is no stigma at all in voice acting anymore. No. I mean,
cool.
Everybody's doing it.
Right.
So, no, it'll make it harder to get in, but I think that it's very challenging. And like I said, the parts can be, you really have to be able to really act really well, because the audiences, like I said before, expect and demand first-rate video games now.
Right.
Too competitive. It's too competitive. And the audiences, I don't care what people say, you know, a guy in a small town watching in his basement, they still know what's good and what's not. And they've, especially if they've played a lot of video games. So, yeah, that's got to be great. Got to be great.
Right.
Yeah, I know we've interviewed a couple different voice actors who have said, you know, refer to like the A-listers coming in as stunt actors.
Yeah, that's so a good way. It's like stunt casting.
Yeah. I don't know if this is person is considered a stunt actor, but it'd be like saying Christopher Walken is not actually voicing a character. It's him. You can obviously tell it's him. It's not like he's going out of his way to conceal the voice or create a voice.
Christopher Walken can read the toilet paper roll for me in a commercial. I don't care. I love him. But I know what you're saying. He's so distinct. And I don't do impersonation, so you don't want to hear me do it. But he's so distinct. Yeah, I'm just looking something up here. Max von Sydow, Christopher Plummer, and Joan Allen were the Linda Carter. Wow, Wonder Woman. I'm looking at Skyrim. And then there's a lot of very well-known voiceover actors in it. But I found for some reason Claudia Christian, Kate Beckinsale was in. Jim Cummings, he's a big voice guy.
Yep.
She was in something I did. I can't remember what. But anyway.
Elder Scrolls Online.
Elder Scrolls Online?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, that's
it's
right.
It's got Kate Beckinsale, Peter Stormare, Bill Nye. Oh,
yes.
The science guy?
Yes. Elder Scrolls. Yes, I knew it was something. And that's continuous work. That's continuous work, Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah. Malcolm McDowell, Alfred Molina, Tara Strong.
See
John
what I mean?
Cleese.
Wow. Yeah, John Cleese, wow. So
I love him.
I feel actually privileged to have done that one, too. That's an interesting Elder Scrolls Online, and I'm still working on on that.
Let me say, like, that's a continued, like, they're every time they do a new update, they bring you back in to do some more lines. Is that what you mean by?
I think so. Yeah.
We'll go with that.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but it's you know, it's out and it just keeps growing and growing, which is great. And I just worked on another one, which is part of a huge. Did I say huge? What would you call it? A huge. boy, is she repetitive in this interview. Part of a major, what would you call it? A major chain, a video game. A franchise. Thank you. That's the word, franchise. I couldn't think of the name. After midnight, my vocabulary goes. Part of a franchise of one of the biggest games. So I just did that, which was fun. And hopefully I'll be able to announce that soon.
All right, can you announce it here?
Pardon?
Is that something you can announce here at all? No.
I just teased you.
Oh,
If you ask me, that means you've been teased.
It wouldn't.
Pretty, very evil. That's all I can tell you.
Wouldn't be murdered, sole suspect, would it?
No, that's on my IMDb. We can talk about that. That was a very interesting game because that was very, very, I call that law and order acting, which is very kind of realistic, naturalistic acting. And I played actually, the maid part was a psychic, a medium who, I still don't understand how this quite fit into the plot, but who's investigating the murder of this child. Very, very, you know, very something you'd see on AMC, a very serious, very amazing role. And it turns out that the murdered child was my daughter. So this was a very, this really drew from major acting and a lot of very vulnerable acting after I was sort of being a psychic. And so I really enjoyed doing that role. It was like an episode, honestly, of Law and Order. You know, it was very straightforward, but I really liked it and very challenging. Very, very dynamic, very huge emotional arc that role had. Yeah. So, but no, that's not the one.
Has there been one actor, video game or theater or big screen, small screen, that has really stood out to you that in a heartbeat you would work with and work with again?
Well, I haven't worked with them, but here's a few. Liam Neeson, Jeff Bridges, Christopher Walken, Gene Hackman, Robert De Niro. How about that?
Works. Now, I know you were involved in a project back in the early days with Paul Walker.
What? First movie I ever did was a movie, and actually, it's just very interesting that you brought that up because a week ago, a fan posted on my Facebook page and on my Twitter a talk show where these two men were reviewing movies with dinosaurs. And this movie was called Tammy and the T-Rex. And Tammy and the T-Rex was a movie. It was all of our first movies in L.A. We kind of all started together. It was Paul Walker, myself, Denise Richards, Poppy Montgomery, who's on that show Unforgettable or something on ABC, Efren Ramirez from Napoleon Dynamite. And when I got to set, he said, "Hey, we worked together." And I said, "We did?" He goes, "Yeah, I was the pizza boy that runs from the dinosaur and Tammy and the T-Rex." And I can't believe I'm talking about this, but I'll tell you. And the guy who was the male lead who I played opposite, Terry Kaiser, was from a very famous comedy called Weekend at Bernie's, where he's a dead guy. If you ever got to rent a movie, a crazy movie, rent Weekend at Bernie's because he's a brilliant, brilliant physical comedian. He was very popular. So we shot this movie in Los Angeles, and it was about this, oh God, Paul Walker and Denise Richards are dating. And the bad guy wants to date Denise Richards. So somehow or other, he gets Paul Walker to a zoo and a lion mauls him and kills him. And the body ends up going into either a dinosaur eats Paul Walker or Paul Walker, no, turns into a dinosaur because me and Terry Kaiser were these mad scientists and I'm his nymphomaniac oversexed assistant. And we put, oh, I know what, we put Paul Walker's brain into the dinosaur. Oh, this movie is, this makes, you know, Gone with the Wind look, no, I'm just teasing. It's the first most fabulous movie of all times. I encourage you to rent this movie. I hope you can get it somewhere. Or Tammy and the T-Rex. And it was Paul Walker's first movie. And he was a doll. And we were all scared out of our minds because we didn't know what we were doing. I was wearing these crazy outfits. Oh, my God. And all I was just, it was a fun, fun ride. And I was very, very sad to hear of his passing so early. It's just, you know, it feels like a part of you, especially when you start with somebody, I mean, even if you don't keep in touch with them, you feel like a part of you goes, because it was our first movie. You never forget your first movies, no matter how bad it was. You know, you're all there working and you work hard and you're having fun. And, you know, it was a silly premise, but, you know, I became very good friends with Denise and we used to hang around for a long time and go out to eat and exercise together and, you know, do all kinds of things. And it's just interesting where everybody kind of ended up. It's a crazy, crazy wild ride, that movie. And then Efren, to meet him again on a Napoleon Dynamite, that was sort of an interesting circle. So Tammy the T-Rex, even though it was not the best movie, has a special place in my heart because of the people I met. And you never forget your first job in movies. You don't.
What's interesting is I always, for some reason, suspected that Efren, like, that was one of his earlier roles with Napoleon. Like, you know, because it seemed like that was Heater's real first role. So I figured most of the cast, you know, that's how you get them really cheap, you know, their first movie. So it's amazing to see or hear that he was actually in a movie.
I doubt it's on his resume because it's not Denise's, it's not on mine, it's not on Paul Walker's. I think it's on my IMDb, but, you know, sometimes we actors don't put things on IMDb. I think the producers did, which is fine. You know what? I don't mind. I really don't mind. I think it's a very funny movie and my part is absolutely crazy. But, you know, you learn from everything. I think from everything.
Do you have a movie that you wish that you hadn't have done? Is there anything that's on your resume that you're like, oh, I wish I'd said no to that one?
No. No? No, I don't. Because even if it was crap or, or even if it was a bad situation where the director or this could be stage two or film or television turns out to be abusive or a jerk, you always meet somebody. You always meet a friend, you become friends with the stage manager. And I'm thinking actually a more in stage, I've had some issues with some people I've worked with who've just been megalomaniacs and not very nice. But every experience, like I said, you end up learning something from or gaining more acting skills or meeting a nice person in the crew or somebody behind the scenes or even your fellow actor that you can, you know, I've had some of my friends are friends for life that I've met from shows, especially stage shows, because I started out in theater. So no, not yet.
But you seem like the person that you said before where you met somebody from before and it's led to doing something else and something else. And so that's a good mentality to have, where it's like no job is ever, you know, bad. No job is ever, you're not above any job. It's just leading you to the next job, possibly.
Right. Or the next friendship, or nothing even to do with the business after that. Yes, we may be both actors, or one may be, you know, somebody who did, I mean, I'm very good friends with a woman who did the lighting for The Collector, a series I did in Vancouver, a supernatural drama. And we still keep in touch, and I'm still good friends with my makeup artist, who worked on my face tirelessly every morning when I couldn't get out of bed. But, you know, there's certain people that you will be friends for life with. You know, like in your business, you meet somebody or, you know, it's... I know instantly. Some of my friends, it's like love at first sight. Like at first sight.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's all beneficial. I really do. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think I saw also that you were on the show Lex. I think we mentioned it earlier, too. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about that show. What were some of your memories from that? Because I know you weren't on it full time, right? If I remember right.
Well, it's interesting. I wasn't on it full time, but it certainly made an impression. I was on it for 4 seasons, though.
Okay.
So
it seemed like you were there, but it wasn't like every episode. Yeah.
Very memorable role, and I give great kudos to Paul Donovan, who created the show and created my initial fan base in the world of sci-fi. Without Lex was my first big sci-fi role. And I had no clue, you know, as an actor from the theater, you go in, you do your work, you do the show and you're disciplined and you do your work. I had no clue about fans, about keeping memorabilia, keeping a sleeve from your costume. I had no clue that all this stuff, you know, was important till later on. But Lex, to me, put me on the map sci-fi wise. So I am eternally grateful for that. I'm also grateful for the fact that fans still keep coming coming for Lex. I still get emails about Jigarada the Wicked. I think as for a woman to play a part like that, that's a sort of a no-holds-barred, balls-to-the-walls, says what people want to say. Usually those parts are for men. And I just had the best time creating a character from the ground up, which is always so great when it's a new show. There's no real, there's a Bible, but there's no real definitive way of playing something. It's not like you come onto an existing show and have to kind of fit in. This is a show where you started from scratch. And yes, I knew she was a cannibal and they wanted somebody loud and aggressive and kind of clumsy. And, you know, they patted me and it was funny. I was the skinniest I've ever been. And I looked the most bulky because they wanted her very, you know, strong looking and kind of weighty in the shoulders. But I loved every minute of it because I've met some friends for life. And also, this was the time where they had budgets and we could travel the world. So what an opportunity to not only play a great, fun part, but to see Halifax, Nova Scotia, Berlin, Germany, Potsdam, Germany, Thailand, where we shot the finale, Apocalypse Now, which was a spoof of Apocalypse Now. And I will never forget my trip to Thailand. It was really, truly one of the highlights of my life. And you know how you say, people say, are there any life-changing things in your life, and you know, any moments in your life? And I would say going to Thailand was unbelievable. The people, the food, the streets. I have never been in something so busy and so wonderfully polluted in my life. I've never met more incredibly warm people. And to shoot in places that were, you know, we don't have this kind of history in North America. That is just, you know, the history is amazing. And old temples and old ruins. It was fascinating. So that, to me, travel, parts, friends, the first, and still people are discovering Lex now. It comes back now and then on, you know, different channels in the U.S. and in Europe. I have a huge fan club in Russia and Bulgaria and Italy and Germany because of Lex. So I'm on the moon because of that show. I will never forget it, ever.
It was Lex and Farscape that really introduced me to the Sci-Fi Channel. So
I think you're right, because it's funny. Farscape, one of my dearest friends is Gigi Edgley from Farscape, and the two of us sit together a lot at sci-fi conventions because our appearance or a sci-fi agent, Jean Orico, represents the two of us. So I'm always hanging with the Farscape people. I'm good friends with David Franklin as well. And so I think both shows were ahead of their time.
Yeah.
And Lex was, a lot of people either, it's sort of, Farscape had more fans because I think Lex was even quirkier and more weird. And I'll tell you, people may not have liked it, but they'll never have forgotten it. Paul Donovan was a genius because kids could like it because they'd say, oh, look at these funny characters. But there was so much double entendre and so many comments politically and religious and about religion and spirituality in the characters and what we were saying. You know, it appealed to intellectuals, and it also appealed to people who just liked it for the base level, right. The pretty girls, the funny costumes, the funny comedic characters. But it was really, I think, maybe 5 years later, it would have done even better. Because I believe that Paul and his writers, Lex Jigaroff, may you rest in peace, Lex Jigaroff, the writer. I was named after his last name. He died recently. I think they were ahead of its time. I really think the show probably would have had more of a following a little bit later. But what a thrill to be invited to do a show like that. That's that crazy.
One of the things that I loved about Lex was the fact that every season was almost like a whole new show because it was set in a different time period. You had the same characters that were your common thread, but it was, I almost want to say it was the Black Adder of sci-fi.
Oh, I agree with that. And for Jigarada, I mean, think about this concept that Jigarada died and they got reincarnated next season or as queen, this lifeless, this queen with a head bobbing in a hot tub with no body. And then I get reincarnated as this real estate agent on Earth. And then I get reincarnated as the Pope. I'm the only female Pope in sci-fi history. So 4 seasons, but yet they all had characteristics of Jigarada. They were all aggressive and loudmouthed and ballsy and funny. So it was genius that I looked differently. Like I wasn't in that skin of a man with the hood, with his head on the back. You know, I was in a queen with sort of this black share hair and kind of looking like the wicked stepmother in Snow White. And then I was this sort of Kay Segal, married with children, kind of New York-y, in leopard skin sort of real estate agent. And then I'm wearing a Pope and a Pope garb with the visor, you know, the golf visor, and I'm worshiping golf instead of Catholicism. And talk about doing something very controversial. You never put religion on television. You really don't. But, you know, this is an incredible concept to be reincarnated in another body and yet have some of the same characteristics. So I, as an actor, welcomed that challenge. I thought it was really innovative and brilliant.
I'm kind of sad because I looked for Lex on Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and I couldn't find it anywhere. So it's really
not
sad. I think it might be on Amazon, but I think it was like pay for Amazon each episode. So I might have to just buy some.
It's all kinds of stuff about, you know, I never know what happens in the future to these shows, and there's all kinds of weird internal things that I'm not privy to, but I thought you could get it online. I thought somebody said they got it on Amazon, but I don't know. I'll lend you my copy.
Okay.
I want you to see it.
Yeah, it sounds great. I love
it. Oh, it was a fun show. It was a fun show.
Yeah.
What do you think about, like, the boom of, like, sci-fi and genre shows on TV now? Do you feel like, how do you think Lex would have fit in with it now? Or do you think it's getting to be almost too much? Is there such thing as too much genre on TV, like sci-fi and fantasy?
No, because, you know, a show like Arrow is different from a show like, well, Arrow and Gotham, they sort of have sort of an old comic book style, but, you know, and then there's Helix, and then there's Defiance, and they all have their own worlds, and it's really actually, there's a ton auditioning right now, too, that I've been auditioning for. that are just keep coming. It's just been unbelievable, the amount. No, I really, it's sort of like saying, some people will say there's too many procedurals, too many CSI type shows or detective shows, but I think there's something for everyone, and there's all kinds of forms. I mean, when someone says, well, Ellen, you've done a lot of sci-fi, I go, yeah, but there's sci-fi that's over the top, more like Lex, and then there's sci-fi like The Collector, which to me is like a very dramatic thing. Like, again, like we go back to Skyrim, like a Law and Order kind of more naturalistic tone. There's various variations on a theme within that umbrella of the sci-fi world. I mean, Star Trek is different than Supernatural, or different than Haven, or, you know, it's all of them are really different. And I sort of get upset with people when they say, oh, you've done a lot of sci-fi, and it's sort of a condescending tone. And I go, I'd like to see you take a sci-fi script and make it real. Or I think some of the best actors actually are on sci-fi shows. I really do, because sometimes you have to make some incredibly illogical stuff, if that's the type of genre it is. Mm-hmm. Logical. I sound like Spock.
I think in the last few years, it's instead of just being kind of like the hokey Star Trek original series, that kind of mentality in fans, in the general public's minds, it's gotten to be more legitimate with, like, you know, Lord of the Rings racking up awards left and right at the Oscars, and Heath Ledger almost winning Best Actor at the Oscars. You know, as a kid, if you told me that somebody playing in a Batman movie might win an Oscar, you know, there's no way. There's no possible way. But now it's actually a legitimate thing that almost did happen. And it's amazing to see as a fan that not only is these things that we love, but, like, everyone is actually loving the same thing. So it's kind of a nice time to be.
I agree completely. And Heath Ledger's performance, may he rest in peace, there was a brilliant, brilliant actor, and so sad. Made me very sad. He completely devoured that role. I mean, that was an amazing. That's like a Silence of the Lambs kind of performance. That is a villain that had so much depth. It wasn't just a twirling your mustache kind of thing. There was all kinds of depth going on deep in the bowels of his soul. I mean, that was an amazing performance. I agree with you. There is just all kinds of, look at an actor, one of my favorite actors, John Noble from Fringe. Look at his performance in Fringe. He blew me away. I mean, an actor that can make me cry and laugh at the same time. I mean, I didn't know what emotion to pick. And, you know, that to me, I mean, that is, I'm a huge fan of his. That kind of stuff, when you see on a sci-fi show, you go, wow. And there's a lot of these kind of interesting actors on shows. And I also like it. I mean, yes, there's a lot of traditional casting in sci-fi shows, but they also go for some interesting faces too. It's not all cookie cutter, so-called perfect LA types. I'm happy about that. As a girl that doesn't quite fit the traditional mold of casting, I'm really I'm really pleased that the rules are available and they're more interesting, as how we started out this conversation, talking about interesting rules for women. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, on that note, that kind of brings us to the end of our show. We thank Ellen for coming on. Where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me, first of all, at this interview. I hope everybody's going to listen to it. At www.ellendubin.com. Please follow me. I'm finally Twittering. It's taken me a while. I've been in ancient times. It's at Ellen Dubin Actor. And on Facebook, there's a Facebook fan page, so you will find it. I'm in a white shirt. And also IMDb me. You can check out all the recent projects that I have coming up. There's a couple of other projects coming up that we didn't have time to discuss, so I'll have to come back again. But I really am very fan friendly. You'll see on IMDb if people want to write me. I have Gigerota 100, Giggerota 100, Gigerota 100 at AOL.com. That is my fan email. I respond to every question that a fan emails me, so please, I'm very fan friendly. Just don't be an idiot. And I will respond to anything that anybody asks me. So please don't hesitate to email and follow me. And thank you guys so much for this interview.
Oh, no problem. Awesome. No problem. And if you want to hear our earlier interview that we did, it was a short abridged interview from MegaCon 2013. It's also on Ellen's site. I think it's called MegaCon. And I can't remember the name of the episode. It's so long ago.
It's the MegaCon 2013. Thing. They'll find it because there's a whole list of interviews at the side. Yeah.
Does it have your picture out next to it, Mike? So
can... It does not.
Oh.
Probably safer that way.
He's cute. He's cute, listeners. Everybody's cute. Thanks again, guys. Have a wonderful, wonderful night.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Ellen.
Yeah.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The bad crowd you've been hanging out with is a science fiction club?
This has been a Weeby Geeks production.
The Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
The Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
The Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Well Watchers.
Check out the pop culture podcast that everyone is talking about. Follow the show on Twitter at Well Watchers. Listen to the show on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and thewellwatchers.com.
Introducing Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Weekly live shows and podcasts.
Rebel Force Radio.
You are on the front lines of fandom by listening to this show.
Jimmy Mack and Jason Swank usher in a new era of Star Wars podcasting.
Rebel Force Radio.
RFR.
Like Rebel Force Radio on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Stay tuned for special announcements about the Rebel Force Radio official webpage.
Leaving no Star Wars fan behind.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your new source for the Force.
Welcome to the new sound of Sorcerer Radio. Version 3.0.
Sorcerer Radio presents the Sorcerer Radio app version 3.0.
We have the technology.
Check out our brand new Sorcerer Radio app for all iDevices as well as Android devices.
Better, stronger, faster.
Streaming Disney music 24/7. App highlights include a new broadcast window that shows you what you're listening to and what's coming up next. Multitasking so you can listen to SR as well as perform other tasks on your iPhone.
Gorge!
Listener access to all of our daily shows. The new interface, a new buffered stream, auto reconnect when signal is lost, visual EQ, pause, rewind, and scrub features.
My goodness!
And the new SR info area. Get your virtual Disney World fix today with the new Sorcerer Radio app version 3.0 from Sorcerer Radio.
Be careful with that. It's extremely dangerous.
SRSounds.com. Pardon the interruption. I have some news which I believe you will find most interesting.
Would you like to hear the latest in Marvel television, film, and comic book news? Are you looking for some suggestions on what to pick up on New Comic Book Day? Well, join Mike and Ken every Saturday night at 8 p.m. on Mighty Marvel Geeks here on Sorcerer Radio, your source for all things Marvel.
There is a matter that requires your attention.
Mighty Marvel Geeks, assemble!
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Dude, what are you doing?
Getting ready for Soda Pop Talk.
We don't actually talk about soda.
Well, don't waste it. Break out the rum.
It's Soda Pop Talk! Exactly. I don't want them to think I'm ignoring them, so I'm going to answer them. But then it turns around, and I'm like, why are they answering me?
Well, see, that just makes me think of, you know, cunnilingus. Let's break right into that right there.
It's a militant teddy bear, you
Dr. Horrible. And that's the only thing that I like by Joss Whedon.
The only thing?
The only thing.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you're definitely not going to hell for that one.
Maybe?
Well, too bad it wasn't like with the song, Hell Yeah.
I even wash my hands after I pee because I have cock hand after that. I'm going to wash the hand off.
Remember, if it's not rotting something, it's not Soda Pop Talk.